The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm Helen Rosner. I'm a staff writer at the New Yorker, and I mostly write about food and cooking and chefs and cookbooks and things like that.
For a foodie like Helen Rosner, heaven is spending the day in the kitchen with another serious cook.
Hi!
Hi, Helen.
It's so good to see you.
Really good to see you.
Learning new dishes and techniques and talking about their favorite subject, even or especially when the conversation is just not fit for broadcast.
I was asked I don't know how much I could swear here, fuck, marry, kill, pasta, rice, bread.
Oh my God.
I know my answers. I'm very curious about yours.
That's really hard.
It's so hard.
Okay. I think I fuck pasta.
Fully.
We are fully fucking pasta. Can we just, like, sacrificially kill potatoes and keep both rice and bread?
Look at you going rogue and bringing in potatoes. Like, me, potatoes coming in, me like, wait, I wasn't even a part of this narrative. What is happening here?
Recently, Helen went to visit Andy Baragani at his home in Brookhaven, New York.
I met Andy Baragani a decade ago when we were working at the same food magazine. Even back then, Andy had a pretty impressive career. He'd cooked at Chez Panisse in high school. That's Alice Waters' famous restaurant in Berkeley, California. But you might know Andy from Bon Appetit's YouTube channel, where he brought his personality, his flair, to every video and dish that he made. Growing up the gay Iranian-American kid in California who watched Jacques Pepin and Julia Child and Martin Yan on TV, Andy had no idea where his blossoming love of food would take him. He's recently published his first cookbook. It's called The Cook You Want to Be, and it's explosive, but maybe not in the way you'd think. Andy fills the pages with tiny changes, little tricks, tiny adjustments, small lessons that transform your cooking from everyday home cooking to really restaurant-level dazzle. It's like adding lemon zest to your breadcrumbs, which gives them acidic and floral notes that totally changes the game. When you watch Andy cook, you also kind of want a pencil and pad right next to you so you can jot down little notes about every little thing he does. So where did this book begin for you? When did you start writing this? Because you've been cooking professionally for like 20 years or 15 years.
But... 15 years, yeah. The book was actually had a different name for a moment. It was The Cook I Want to Be.
Ah.
And the book was going to be even that much more personal, kind of taking on, telling all the stories throughout my life. And while there are definitely still, you know, personal essays, I changed the I to you. I wanted to bring in the reader. I wanted to extend a hand. And I didn't want it to just be about what I've gone through. I wanted to kind of pass those stories and those lessons to the reader so that to empower them and so that hopefully they could find out the cook they want to be.
I love the way that you approach sauces in this cookbook. I'd love to talk to you about that a little bit too.
Yes.
You open, one of the first sections in the book is just a collection of all-purpose sauces, and they're not what I would expect to see in a collection of all-purpose sauces, where, like, you might expect to see, well, like, here's your marinara and here's your pesto, but instead you open with, like, this shocking lemon and shallot vinaigrette, and you don't even suggest putting it on a salad. You suggest using it on top of grilled vegetables or roasted meats.
Yes, I think it's really, when you have a pantry full of great sauces or toppings or sprinkles, it elevates the dish. You don't need to do much to the dish. You can roast some vegetables, and if you have a good sauce, it kind of ties it all together. There's a section for tangy things, which is called a hit of acid, creamy sauces, green sauces, crunchy toppings, fiery sauces that are to add some heat. I think it's always helps to have a few sauces in your back pocket.
Are there any lessons or tricks or recipes or ingredient pairings in the book that were revelations to you, that you learned from someone or that you discovered and that just sort of made your eyebrows shoot up and you went, oh my God, this is it?
Oh my God, now my Rolodex is going through. I rarely want to roast pistachios because it dries them out or removes their freshness, and I want that tender creamy inside, so I leave them raw. Or I take my panko breadcrumbs, which you'll see later today, to the point where they're just almost burnt, but I don't burn them because I want that deep toasty nuttiness from them. Cook your seeds and nuts in fat, so you have this beautifully toasted nut, but then that scented leftover fat as well. I don't even know. To always save your pasta water. There's so many things. There are too many things.
So now that you've gotten to know Andy a little bit, let's cook. What are we making today?
So today we're making this cauliflower ragu with lemony breadcrumbs. And it doesn't have a lot of ingredients, but it has a lot of flavor. And it kind of mimics the texture and flavor of a bolognese, but without the meat.
So we're here in the kitchen. And on this electric stove, you have two big pots. One is slightly taller and more narrow, and one is slightly wider and shorter. What are these two big pots for?
I have two pots set up, which I am a firm believer in for pasta. If you're cooking for four people and you're cooking anything more than 12 ounces of pasta, you have to have a two-pot setup. What that means is you have a pot of boiling water for your pasta and then a pot for your sauce, and where your pasta will eventually end up and finish.
Not a skillet, but a pot.
No, even a very large skillet or a large skillet with the high sides, it still, to me, doesn't do the trick because there's too much going on, and the pasta will get messy, the sauce will go all over. You want a large pot. I'm telling you, it is a game changer. I promise. So we're just heating some oil up in the same pot where you're going to make the sauce. Heat that up over medium-high heat. You'll be adjusting the heat if it goes too hot. And then you're adding half a cup of panko, Japanese breadcrumbs. And you're just going to let that sizzle and toast, and you'll see how it'll gradually change from this kind of pale, just almost off-white color to golden, to then this like deeply, deeply toasty, crunchy breadcrumb.
Oh, that it happened. They totally just crossed the line.
See?
They meaningfully got darker.
Right there. It's like takes it, and people really would pull like 20 seconds before, but this is, I think, where it makes all the difference.
So, dicing the cauliflower.
Yes. So, you're taking a whole head of cauliflower, and if you have a food processor, you could just remove the florets and throw in the stems and just pulse it until you kind of get these kind of bitsy pieces. They don't need to be even. You want that kind of irregularity here.
And it's bigger than cauliflower rice. It's not like teeny tiny little grains.
Definitely.
They're like chunks.
Yes.
Small chunks.
And then you'll set that aside. A little bit of prep work, slicing the onions, slice one red onion, and then quite a bit of garlic.
Sauce pot.
You're just heating up more oil up. And then once that's hot, I add the thinly sliced onion and garlic.
You take the onions in this step a lot farther than I feel like I'm used to taking my onions when I'm making a pasta sauce. Like, really, like they're browning on the edges. And
we don't want these onions to be blonde and juicy and soft or jammy. We want them frizzled and brown in spots and that kind of caramelization. And then anchovies. Which, you know, you can omit. You don't have to put it in, but
I don't think we should even give people that option.
Okay, I take that back. You can't. You have to use them. I'm sorry, everybody.
They add so much. They're essential.
It fools the people who are tasting it that are not the cook that it's been cooking for a long, long time. And then I add half a cup of tomato paste.
It really does get incredibly dry in the pan when you just have this deep, dark, brick red onion, garlic, tomato jam.
And I'll say, like, you'll be very tempted to add more oil because the pot will look dry, and you'll see how the tomato paste is beginning to stain some of the oil, but don't. That's when you kind of add the cauliflower. And then you're gonna add your pasta that to the pot that has not cooked all the way. It'll be a little bit too crunchy, but you'll add that pasta and a good amount of pasta water. I always save my pasta water, but I'll start with a cup and a half, which is a lot. But because your sauce is not really a loose sauce, it's a paste. So you add your pasta, water. They're not two separate things. It's not pasta and sauce. They need to marry and come together. And this is where it's essential to kind of take the time. It's gradual. And then we throw in the butter to kind of add that another layer of fat.
Oh, wow.
And that takes it to really another level because the sauce has so many things going on, even with the few ingredients. It's garlicky, it's oniony, it's has all that anchovy flavor, it's spicy, it's tangy from the tomato, and the butter kind of soothes everything and allows really all those ingredients to kind of shine and come through and stop fighting one another. And then you just plate it up in bowls, and you have that toasty lemony breadcrumbs, and I am a big fan of carbs on top of carbs.
I love it. So how do you feel about people who add red pepper flakes as a finishing spice?
I don't understand it.
I don't know.
I'm very confused because most red pepper flakes are just have no heat to them. They need to kind of come back to life. I feel like they've been living in the aisles, depressed, sad, and just they need to be awakened. And they need that heat and that fat to kind of come alive. And if you just sprinkle on it, it tends to be too coarse. So if you're sprinkling it to finish, I would grind it up at least. Not with your fingers, but really get in there with a mortar and pestle or a spice blender.
Andy Baragani is the author of The Cook You Want to Be, and he spoke with The New Yorker's Helen Rosner. If you're making the cauliflower ragu, don't burn the breadcrumbs, and let us know how it goes.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.